So, good morning.
Good morning.
Today is April 16, 2015. We are here in Aleph Hall with Professor Joseph Wheeler.
Weiler.
Right. Sorry about that.
Let's
Professor
get that
Joseph
right.
Weiler. With, yes. And we are here to talk about his 4 decades with UBC Law.
Yeah.
And his life in general. So, welcome again.
Yeah, thanks.
So, let's start with the beginning.
Okay.
So, tell us about your background, your family background. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in northwestern Ontario, actually. It's now known as Thunder Bay, Ontario.
Mm-hmm.
And I spent my first 18 years there. In those days, it was called Port Arthur and Fort William. It amalgamated in 1970 after I'd left, and now it's called Thunder Bay. And it was a community of 125,000 people that was 400 plus miles from anywhere, but it was a wonderful place to grow up as a kid and an adolescent. We had access to lakes and the outdoors, and we made a lot of our own fun, and we had the joys every once in a while of making those long treks to Minneapolis or Winnipeg, to see the big city and then go back to this very safe and comfortable resource town, and that's where I grew up. So at 18 I left and I went down to the University of Toronto and studied philosophy and history for 4 years in an honors program, which then led to going to law school at Osgoode Hall Law School, which is I was the first class at York University when the law school moved from downtown Toronto, where it had been run by the Law Society of Upper Canada, to become a professional faculty of York University up in its Downsview campus up in the northwest part of Metro Toronto. So I spent three great years, at Osgoode. There was a terrific faculty at the time. I think in those days, this is 1969 to 72, the legal education was really coming into its own in Canada, and so many scholars were going on from law school and getting graduate degrees primarily in the United States and England, and then coming back to teach and to practice, and so that was really the culture of Osgoode Hall at the time. So many of the people who taught me, from Dean Gerald Ledane, who during the period that I was there ran a royal commission on the non-medical use of drugs, to John Hogarth, who eventually came out to UBC Law School, who was very hands-on doing work on policing and governance of policing in communities. And there was a 10 people who were leading cutting-edge scholars and writers and teachers, but also very much connected to law reform in the community. So that was the context in which I grew up. I then came out to article in Vancouver and get called to the bar. My principal was Alan McEachran, who went on to become the Chief Justice of BC for over 30 years. But he was a wonderful mentor of mine, and I got involved in some great cases, junioring him, many of which were in the criminal defense, white collar crime area, and that then became the subject of the graduate work that I did the next couple of years when I went to University of California at Berkeley and did a master's of law and continued to do some appellate work under Alan McEachran's working on his files, but using all of that sort of hands-on practice experience to think bigger thoughts and frame it in a way that was would be valuable for legal scholarship and writing. And it was while I was at Berkeley, I was recruited to come to UBC Law School, and I joined the faculty as an assistant professor in 1974. And here I am, 41 years later, I'm still here. And I've really enjoyed a career at UBC. It's like any junior faculty member, it's tough, you know, for the first few years here. In my case, I had four separate courses and put in front of classes with students that were only, you know, 2 to 4 years younger than I was. But they recognized that I was in my, you know, the development of my legal teaching career. And we learned together, and then, you know, over a period of time, you sort of migrate from the initial areas of interest to other areas that you become aware of, and so it's been a lifetime journey for me, career-wise, you know, to kind of migrate from, you know, essentially criminal defense work to sort of labor relations, labor law, collective bargaining law, neutral work to comparative collective bargaining law systems with, you know, sort of Canada, the United States, Japan, and Europe, or primarily Germany, you know, through the late 70s and into the 80s. And while I was doing that, I no longer practiced any criminal defense work, but I did do some dispute resolution work in labor management disputes in BC and in the north, and all of which was a really great package for me to essentially, you know, be connected into the real world of collective bargaining and resolving disputes between unions and management, and then taking that experience, not just in the cases that I had, but you know, just the networks of people working in the field, to bring that back to the classroom, back to the way that I approach the problems as a scholar, you know, to inform you know the kind of work that I was sort of doing as a law professor. So for me, it's always been very much a base at the law school with some outreach to be able to work and to bring what I've learned into the community and learn from the community and bring that back into the classroom and the writing that I was doing as a law professor. Mm-hmm. So in some ways my career has been kind of eclectic, because as I mentioned, I started, you know, with a heavy focus on criminal law and criminal law procedure. And advanced criminal law, you know, thought fraud and theft, and sort of those kinds of paper crimes, and you know, to focus in the 80s on collective bargaining, dispute resolution, alternative dispute resolution, and through that period, I was essentially left the law school in. At a couple of times. I was appointed under an act of Parliament, the Continuation of Ports Act, in 1986, you know, to run a commission of inquiry into the container traffic business in British Columbia, and to try to drill down into the competitive advantages and disadvantages of our ports, primarily the Port of Vancouver. And to learn what we could do to enhance that competitiveness, but by reference to, you know, Seattle, Tacoma, Oakland, San Francisco, LA, Long Beach, you know, the other major points of or ports of entry for what is, through that period, a rapidly increasing trade relationships with the Asia Pacific region. So that was really, really a great experience for me to have a chance to have a significant impact in one of the big economic drivers, you know, in the West Coast, and that is our gateway potential to Asia, and to Asia, actually, in North America, not just Canada, primarily the United States. And so it was really sort of a combination of what I'd learned in dispute resolution, in the practice that I was doing, and what I'd learned in the classroom, and what I'd learned from, you know, other disciplines here at University of British Columbia. I had very close relationships with Craig Riddell, who was the head of the economics department and sort of Canada's leading labor economist, with Mark Thompson, who was the, you know, the head of the commerce faculty, now Sauder Schools. He was the top industrial relations scholar in Canada. And the three of us did a lot of collaborative work. We did a fair bit of, you know, multidisciplinary conferencing. And we brought our three networks together into, you know, trying to, you know, provide from a university perspective, you know, the bigger picture in which smaller disputes could be framed, and then the work could be, the ideas that we were able to bring to the table and to, you know, test those out with people who have to implement those ideas, that we could, you know, help our, you know, communities to be solving these structural, you know, and relationship issues in a much more profound way and a much more lasting way. So there's the joy of working in a university like, you know, the University of British Columbia, is that, you know, the commerce faculty was about 300 meters from the law school. The economics department was 50 meters from the law school. And we became great professional colleagues and friends, and, you know, with, you know, the capacity to learn from each other and to, you know, tap into the work and the networks that they had in these complementary, you know, sort of disciplines. So that, it, from my perspective, if I'm making recommendations around law reform and dispute resolution, it's informed by, you know, what will be the bigger impact on the sort of regional and national economy, which Craig could provide. And from Mark's perspective, whose focus was on, you know, labor management relationships, and from an industrial relations perspective, that really enhanced the meaning that I could bring and the wisdom that I could bring in the work that I was doing, both outside the university context in the community, and as well that would then inform the kind of teaching and course design that I was involved in at UBC, and of course the scholarship that I would do, which would, you know, leverage off the public reports that I was writing and put those in a more scholarly, you know, sort of peer-reviewed framework. So it's that whole era opened me up to the fact that learning is indeed a lifetime, you know, enterprise, and from, you know, a focus on criminal justice to dispute resolution in the workplace, to how sectors and regional economies work, to, you know, having impact on, you know, the role of law in enhancing or even just getting out of the way, you know, so that, you know, private actors could do the right thing, you know, with the assistance of the kind of bigger picture that that university professors working as a team can really bring to the table. So my career emerged then through the 80s with, you know, some big mandates that I got from Ottawa and from Victoria. I was seconded out to head up something called the Asia Pacific Business Institute, of you know, which was a three university initiative funded with seed money from the Government of Canada. And UBC, Simon Fraser, and the University of Victoria were the universities involved, but the concept was essentially a P3 model, where the universities would work together and then have, through this institute, a relationship with the business community. And on our board, for example, we had, you know, the head of McMillan Bloedel, the largest forest industry company of the province, Alcan, you know, the largest mining and metals, you know, business in Canada, with a huge operations up in Kitimat, the Canadian Labor Congress had its ex-president, Joe Morris, was on the board. The Business Council of BC, Jim Matkin, was on the board. The head of the Hong Kong Bank of Canada, he was on the board, and that was the period in which they were buying the Bank of BC. So it was great for them to actually be working together, and then working with, you know, the law school, the business schools, the schools of applied economics, you know, from the three universities, all of which was supported by government, and was to, you know, essentially bring together the top minds in the university sector, the business sector, and the government sector to enhance Canada's position as a trading partner and investment target in the Asia Pacific. So again, you know, a wonderful opportunity for me. It wasn't really about law, it was really about how higher education could partner with the business community to enhance business relationships. So my career changed in that sense. Mm-hmm. And it was no longer sort of legal doctrine, it was very much the kind of perspective that you can have as somebody trained as a lawyer and a law professor, and put that to work in the business community, so that Canada could continue to grow in the right way. And while the universities, there were three founding universities, it was not just those. I mean, part of my job was to identify the talent in other universities in Canada that were that could be brought into these various sort of projects, and part of it was to designing programming, all of which was sort of directed not at university students. This was directed, you know, at the business community, so to help them to teach each other, but with all the sort of academic rigor that we could bring, so that the programs were well designed and had opportunity for follow-up, and little by little to start making an impact. So mm-hmm. So that was a great, opportunity for me. Eventually, the Asia Pacific Business Institute got, folded into something called the Asia Pacific Foundation of Canada. I came back to the law school, and then my course load changed again. You know, it was that time that Pat Quinn and Brian Burke came to town to take over the last place, Vancouver Canucks, 1987. And by 1988, we had a course that Pat was somewhat involved in. Brian was very much involved in. Brian had been a student of my brother Paul at Harvard Law School in 1980, and had been an agent for players up to that point. Well, he came in in senior management of the Canucks, and he was the one really that initiated this course. So we got it going, and it was the first sports law course, and entertainment law course in Canada, and I should say that, you know, through this period, if I have to be identifying, you know, deans that really made a huge impact in my life, the dean through that period was Peter Burns. Mm-hmm. Peter had two terms as our dean. He had been a criminal law scholar before that, and also taught torts, so I knew him as a colleague, and then I knew Peter as a leader. And one of the things that Peter did through the 80s was to change the, you know, in a sense, the essence of what the role of the law school, you know, was, from one where we were just had a whole bunch of congenial colleagues doing their own things to and being happy in this environment, to one where their colleagues would get together with, in areas of specialty. And so it was during that era that Peter led the first, what's now the Asian law program, you know, got going initially as a Japanese law program, in 1981, 82, and we had some outside funding from the Bell Foundation, and we, as a team of professors and with some practitioners who were also very anxious to participate. We put on a major conference in Tokyo, and then an ongoing program developed. And it was really through that program and the work that I've been doing in comparative labor policy that I got to work with, you know, sort of leading Japanese labor law scholars, and it was out of that that I was chosen to do some, you know, critical work for the then McDonald Royal Commission on the economic prospects for Canada and the economic union of Canada, and so that sort of comparative work and interdisciplinary work for the McDonald Commission, you know, sort of qualified me to some extent to, you know, take on the role of the head of the Asia Pacific Business Institute. So, but Peter Burns was really the man who was the most supportive of my career as dean, and he had a major impact as, you know, centers of excellence, started to emerge from the law school. There was, in the 90s, with the incoming Lynn Smith as our dean, we, you know, developed what started was a program for women in the law, and then became the program of feminist legal studies, which is still very much a vibrant, you know, an important part of, you know, what UBC Law School is about. But that process of identifying those kinds of centers of excellence, which would allow, you know, professors who were doing different kinds of work to actually work together internally and then through a center to work with others outside the law school, sort of new emerging culture in the law school was really came about through Peter Burns' leadership. So, for me, he had a, like I mentioned, that, like with Alan McEachran, there are certain individuals had a big impact on my growth as a law professor and as a, you know, a part-time, you know, ongoing lawyer, and then as well as somebody who, you know, has done a fair bit of outreach, you know, from the university context into the community. So Peter, I'll be forever grateful for him for encouraging me and supporting me to take on that role, which was, when I think of it, really the kinds of things that, as I mentioned earlier, the professors at Osgoode Hall Law School, you know, back in my first introduction to, you know, law school in 1969 to 72, that's exactly the kind of work that they were doing. And I was fortunate enough to be able to, you know, take that kind of career, and that has been the essence of what I've been doing now for over 40 years. Mm-hmm. So that takes us through to the 90s, and in the 90s it was, you know, the fun thing for me was that I grew then to take a more significant role as a sports lawyer, and a media and entertainment lawyer, and I had a fair bit I had a lot of fun actually, and the courses that developed, and I'm still teaching them, you know, today, you know, lucky me, is that they would very much be inclusive of the leaders of the sports and entertainment community being prominent guests in many of the classes, you know, that we had over that period and still do. And so that model came right from, you know, Brian Burke and Pat Quinn being part of the original course, you know, but since then the Canucks have always been a big supportive organization to the sports law course, as have the Lions, you know, as have the Whitecaps, when they were here, the Grizzlies, and as well, you know, through the, 2000 and three right through 2010, you know, the Vancouver Winter Olympic Games, and VanOck, the organizing committee, you know, was always, you know, very keen to support work that was being done in the law school and to participate in the, you know, pedagogical opportunities for students, you know, both in regular classes and in conferencing that we did, you know, in and around, you know, those you know, very vibrant sort of areas that touch on, you know, the community's heartbeat in, you know, in the Lower Mainland. So that that's been an ongoing source of a lot of inspiration and a lot of fun, actually. And that sort of model of, you know, learning from the community who participate on an ongoing basis in these courses, and taking that information and making it much more real than for students, and bringing that kind of perspective into the kind of writing, research and writing that I was doing, you know, was something that I've been doing for decades and continue to do. The difference being is that, you know, I'm a sports nut and an entertainment buff, and I get to do hours every day of research that's directly relevant to the kind of teaching and scholarship that I'm doing, but others would think it being, you know, pure recreation. So in some ways I've been lucky to take recreation and make it part of my career, and will continue to do so.
Great. So you joined UBC Law in 1974. Can you tell us some of the differences between UBC Law then, when you started as an institution, and now? What would be some of the key differences?
Well, in those days, in 74, as I said, the kind of culture of UBC Law School was one where most of the faculty was doing what we'll call black letter courses, right? There were courses that directly fed into the practice of law. They were very much what the law is, what legal doctrine was, and what you had to know to be successful to go through the bar admission and the articling period and become a lawyer. I found that it was much less analytical, in the sense that it was less of a policy perspective on it, more of a, you know, here's what the law is, here's what it's going, as opposed to why is it going, and is it going in the right direction. Mm-hmm. And so through the 80s and 90s, we became, you know, much more analytical and critical, and were that sort of blend between policy and law, you know, became more fluid, and the kind of perspective as well with scholars that we attracted to our faculty became much more critical and much more theoretical. You know, so where it was practice oriented in the 1970s, it was much more graduate school and theoretical by the 90s. And that's always going to be the tension in any legal faculty, you know, but how you have that sort of blend of relevance to the practice of law and the sort of the twin virtue of being at the cutting edge of thinking, you know, in the area from the macro level, and not just solving immediate, you know, problems for clients. So that's, you know, I think that's one of the major differences. The second is the amount of clusters of work, you know, that are going on within the faculty. I think now there's a Richard Paisley, who's now left, he got the Andrew Thompson program on natural resources law together. And there was an interesting ongoing advisory board of the major figures from our law firms and larger resource companies at the table to, you know, provide a, you know, input into how a program like that, which was designed to produce, some kind of a certification if the students have taken a certain number of courses, and internship opportunities for students. That was the, you know, that was a program that Richard sort of piloted. And now you see, you know, that being, played out in other contexts. So in the Center for Business Law, for example, there is a cluster. You get a certificate if you've taken a certain number of minimum you know, mandatory courses and elective courses, you know, so that, you know, law students are able to, you know, sort of target UBC as a place where there is the sufficient number of courses, but there is the opportunity for recognition that you can, if you're successful in those courses, you know, you've already stamped yourself as somebody with a specialty, you know, as for any recruiting law firm, which would be, which was looking for something like that, they would know in advance that the student had completed that. So those kinds of developments where, you know, we didn't do that at all, you know, when I got here initially, and that and the context of different, you know, centers of research excellence, I think is a major difference between now and what we used to do. The one thing I think has not been as vibrant in the last few years, at least certainly not in my case, is the amount of interdisciplinary work that we do with other faculties and departments within the university. I found that in the 80s, for example, I did, as I mentioned, a fair bit of work with the Department of the Economics and the Commerce faculty. But, you know, there was others, the political science and other sort of relevant faculties who were, you know, were doing a fair bit of work with the law school. And my colleague Robin Elliott was one of them. He and I had worked on a couple of, you know, projects that were really focused on, well, I know we worked on the Mobility Rights Clause in the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms together. But part of that is that we were tied into, you know, political science, who was thinking about bigger issues of governance, and how could that play down as we're sort of, you know, carving out an area of what would be Canada's constitutional amendments that would be a check and balance on governance. So I just think that there's less at this stage, and there's certainly area for, you know, sort of a bit of repositioning as we're going forward, you know, in order to, you know, to really sort of build more bridges and do more collaborative work with other, you know, with other faculties and departments within the university, and then hopefully as well with scholars from, you know, from a multidisciplinary perspective, scholars from other, you know, universities. And so if you drill back into the criminal law area, that we don't really have a lot of work that we're doing at this stage with, for example, you know, the criminology scholars, which is a major focus, you know, of Simon Fraser University, which is in our city, but I think they might as well be 1,000 miles away. We really don't do much with Simon Fraser, and I think that's something that we could, you know, a direction which we could move, you know, to everybody's benefit.
Great. So, a little bit of a personal question. Do you remember your job interview here at UBC Law? Can you describe the process for us, and do you remember any particular conversations?
It was almost as if they had already decided when they got in touch with me. I didn't, you know, so they got in touch with me, I think it was Joe Smith at the time, and got me to put an application in. I came up from Berkeley, where I was at graduate school, and they kind of showed me around the law school, but it certainly wasn't the rigorous present a paper and being part of a, you know, a competition for spots that, you know, has been the case for the last 25 years. So it, for me, it was a totally not stressful, they want me, you know, I called it a recruitment rather than, you know, me applying for a job and competing for it with a whole bunch of others. And I think part of it was that at the time, the law school was expanding. We were moving into a new building in a couple of years. That building's now been replaced by the building that we're in. And some of the people that had worked in the field that I was doing were actually leaving. And one of those was Jim Matkin, who had moved over in 1973 from teaching constitutional and labor law here at the law school over to be the Deputy Minister of Labor and ultimately the Deputy Minister of Intergovernmental Affairs, you know, in the provincial government. So in a sense, Jim left a gap and I filled the gap, and I had been I had some contact with him beforehand, and I was really lucky that when he moved over there, he was one of the people that recognized the kind of work that I wanted to do, and so immediately, you know, work started flowing from the provincial government, which, you know, provided me with that sort of outreach learning opportunity, and then internally to be, you know, bringing that experience for me, you know, back into the classroom. And that's the difference in a sense in my life, is that so much of what I've learned has been from working in the community, not from reading other people's books, you know. And that's a very different, you know, kind of framing of what I can add to the classroom than the case for others. I've always been the practitioner, with it, my main focus being as a law professor.
Mm-hmm. So. Great. So what was the workload like when you started teaching, and how has that changed?
Well, I had four separate courses. That's changed now. I know that they're much easier on incoming faculty. They're, you know, until such time as they've been through their promotion and gotten tenure, their course load is significantly less. Mm-hmm. Than the normal course load. That was, we had a baptism of fire when I started, and they were courses that, you know, I had a couple of criminal law courses, but, you know, criminal law, advanced procedure and advanced criminal law, and then I did a course of constitutional law, which then was federalism, and a seminar on labor law policy, so which I still do. So, but it, you know, these were different kinds of courses, two of which are very practice oriented, and then ultimately I moved into teaching first year criminal law, which is more theory and oriented a couple of years later. But in the first few years, there was a huge workload for incoming faculty, and an effort by the existing faculty, you know, to mentor, to be available, to answer questions, and but they were very intense years of very long days and a little performance anxiety going into the classroom, but the students knew, they knew that you hadn't been there for a long time, so they were somewhat empathic, at least in my experience, and so, as I say, we learned together. But now I think it's a much smarter approach, where, you know, incoming faculty are not overburdened with courses, but they are expected to be continuing to write their 10-year piece and be involved in more of the research and scholarship side of things, with a lesser, you know, sort of load of administrative committee work. For me now, I mean, I've still been teaching the, you know, equivalent of four courses, but, you know, much greater role in the last, you know, 20 years, and particularly the last 10 years as the chair of the admissions committee, and that's actually been a lot of fun, because over time you get, you develop judgment, a close working relationship with the recruitment or sort of the admissions staff, who are very, very good, you know, and have been for a long time. And so we have an admissions team, really, of faculty and staff that is a well-oiled machine, and one of the strengths of the law school, because that really is where they, you know, the students, their first you know, experience of UBC Law School is with admissions, right? And so if that is handled competently and empathically, then when they get here, they've already got a favorable impression, and our job when they get here is to make that even deeper and more rewarding for them.
So as a law professor of 41 years,
yeah.
Can you tell us what are some of the changes in the profession itself that you have noticed throughout this period?
I think that the profession, very quickly people are specialized right away. You know, the idea of general litigators that are, you know, doing litigation, personal injury work, commercial litigation, criminal defense work, those days are over, right? People get slotted pretty quickly, I think, within the first few years of practice, you know, into an area that they become a specialist in. And that's very different than, for example, the, you know, my father had a law firm in Thunder Bay, and a lot of them did a lot of different things. And as well, they were very much part of their community. And I think that now the firms, when I articled in the initial year of my practice, it was with a firm called Russell and Dumoulin, which is now Faskins. Russell and Dumoulin was the biggest firm in Vancouver, had 40 lawyers. And, you know, Faskins is a national firm with 500 lawyers. And so, you know, the kind of local stories and local connections of Russell and Dumoulin to our community, you know, get lost when firms, you know, grow to 10 times the size and with 10 different national locations and some kind of a affiliation or a relationship with a global law firm. That's a very different thing. So that didn't exist when I got here. But, you know, having said that, there are still the community, most lawyers practice in smaller, you know, community firms and who do a broad range of things, who you bump into their clients at the grocery store or sit on hospital boards in their communities together. That kind of experience has stayed the same. The third thing that's different now is that there's a lot of firms now that are boutique firms, right? They become specialists right away, and all they do would be securities work. All they do is, you know, labor and employment work. So they don't do this as part of a bigger firm. They do this with a part of, together with, you know, like-minded specialists who they choose one by one. The firms don't get that big. You know, those are firms from 15 to, you know, 30 to a maximum of 40 lawyers, and so they still have, I think, a much greater esprit de corps, you know, because they're doing the same thing, they're teaching each other, and then they farm out other work that comes in to other specialist firms, and there's a lot of reciprocity that goes on, you know, in those kinds of circumstances. So that kind of specialization as a firm was something that didn't exist, you know, when I came to practice here in 1972.
Great. So have you thought of mentored any memorable students or lawyers you would like to mention?
There's 1,000 of them. There's tens of thousands of students. Now the question is, you know, who do I choose? I'll just mention a few and maybe we can follow up with some more later. But there's a few characters that I learned right away, you know, that have become, you know, sort of giants in their fields. One of them was Ron Tyso, you know, who was a research assistant of mine in 77, I guess. And Ron, you know, articled at Ferris, and, you know, he'd worked for me in the criminal law area, helping to put together, you know, a casebook that I was involved in. And then he went to business school at Western, and then got recruited by Robert Campo, you know, to who was that at that point Canada's largest developer, and then Campo, you know, made a big move to buy Allied Stores and then Federated Stores, and all of a sudden, Tyso, who this law student 6-7 years later was the president of Allied and Federated Stores, which were the largest organization of high-end department stores in the world, right? And he was based in Cincinnati, and he did that for 25 years, right? But never, you know, lost touch, right? The other fellow, and I'll get to this in a minute. Another fellow was part of that research group was, you know, Barry Davies, and Barry had worked for the Canucks prior to coming to law school, And then he practiced up in Kelowna, and then he got appointed to the trial division of the Supreme Court, where he still is. Bill Kaplan, you know, who is a what was my research assistant 78-79, and then went to Harvard, did graduate work under my brother Paul at Harvard Law School, and came back and became a labor lawyer, and now and then became the managing partner of the Blake Castles and Graydon office in Vancouver, and now he's, you know, among the, you know, a handful, one handful of top counsel in the city, right, and doing the most interesting work, the most challenging work, from a variety of perspectives, both insolvency and restructuring work, to you know, a lot of big infrastructure development work. And what ties these three guys together is they're all part of my NFL, you know, football pool, which we established in my office back in 1977. And there's been 15 of us that have been through the years that have joined the pool. And we get together every week online, and Bill is our commissioner of the pool. When there's, it's great fun to, you know, to you know, kid each other as how we're doing each week on our pool, and then we divide up a few winnings at the end. But it's a micro community of students, all of whom have gone on to do fantastic things in their careers from a different perspectives. You know, there are others who are oil men, and David Johnson in that pool is an oil man and a leader of a big company in Calgary. David Tyso is on our Court of Appeal. All of them, though, participate as equals in this football pool. And so it's one of those, you know, things dear to my heart that you know, where we take the time each week to comment on each other's performance, you know, in an area of sort of mutual fun and interest. And all of that came out of UBC Law School. The other that I'll mention in a totally different context, but I had lunch with him last week, is Ian Pulver. Ian was a guy who was in the first sports law course back in 88 and 89, and then he did it, went on to do a directed studies paper for me. And then when the NHL entry draft was here in 1990, he came back from where he was articling in Toronto. And he had his directed studies paper, and he dropped it in the mailbox of all the NHL general managers who were here, and then found Bob Goodenow in a working out in a gym at the Landmark Hotel. Goodenow was just taking over from Alan Eagleson as the head of the Players Association, and kind of sold him on his ideas in his term paper. And Goodenow said, "Geez, you know, what would you think if I got in touch with your firm to?" You know, see if I can buy some of your time so that as part of your articling experience, you would, you know, you would work for the Players Association, whose office is based in Toronto. And, well, that was a dream come true for Ian Pulver. And so Ian did that and then immediately became the Associate General Counsel of the Players Association, which he did for 15 years and until... he left, and now he's one of the leading, you know, sports agents, sports lawyer representatives of he's got 100 hockey players right now. He's partners with Igor Larionov, you know, a world-famous Russian hockey star. And so there's somebody who took the course, took his paper, used it as his calling card, and then has gone on to be a major influence in hockey, both at the domestic and international level, and now representing, you know, kids who eventually can become stars, and giving them the kind of advice that they need to be, you know, become leaders in their community rather than, you know, just somebody that can score goals or assists or play defense on the ice. So he's the kind of person who, you know, had the sufficient, you know, courage really to, first of all, to, you know, have a vision of a career path and take it through UBC and then use his work here as a calling card to get noticed and then go on and do great things, you know, in a career where I had lunch with him last week because he's now 50 and he's celebrating 50th birthday parties with his classmates, and we're talking about ways that he can, you know, come back and be a guest in the sports law course and contribute in some way to the, you know, to sports law at UBC, which really got him going, you know, as a lawyer, and he still is a practicing lawyer. Mm-hmm. So I've got 100 stories like that, and it's been such a joy, you know, for me, is that relationship with students, and I do keep in touch with them in different ways. And as a teacher then, to be able to mentor, you know, people like that, and then be mentored back, you know, as they go out and do things in our community is one of the things that makes a life of being a law professor such a very unique and special role.
Great. So the last question that we have as we approach the end of the hour is sort of the open-end question. Is there anything about your tenure with UBC Law that you would like to reflect on that we perhaps haven't mentioned so far? Any anecdotes, anything that comes to mind?
Let's adjourn and I'll think about that. Nothing comes to mind. I just rattled on here, you know, and so I really, you know, one of the things that you know, from my perspective, I haven't said it before, is that the, you know, what's been fabulous for me is to be able to have an eclectic career where I have, you know, moved from, you know, so one area of legal scholarship or legal practice to another, or work, or use it in community and not in the, from the strict perspective of legal practice or legal scholarship. And that sense that somebody from a university setting can actually be given the opportunity to actually make a difference in their community. And it's all identifiable, it's all measurable. And then that feeds back into, you know, giving me, and for example, the opportunity to, it just gives me the energy to do it again and again, right? It's that sort of, it's that feedback loop that makes me want to continue to help, which at the end of the day is really what, you know, lawyers and law professors are about, is to serve our communities. And I've been given I'm so fortunate, I've been given the chance from UBC Law School to be able to, you know, have a foot not only within the academic community but within the broader community in order to contribute in ways that where I could be useful. So that to me is, when I look back on my career, I'm so happy that I, you know, decided, you know, not to do an exclusive practice-oriented career. But to come to UBC in order to, you know, in order to work from this base.
Well, on that note, thank you for your time. It was an absolute pleasure.
Okay, thank you very much. It is a pleasure to reminisce like that, right? After 41, and I still got a few to go.
Excellent.
So, but if there's other things that you think that I might be able to do, or that Peter Allard would, or drilling down into any of this, I'm happy to do it, because obviously it's still in the back of my brain, and I'd be happy to share it.
Excellent.
But you're the best judge, comparing it to others, whether there's things that I, in my rambling, I've missed. So,
thank you very much.